We're going to Israel. You want to come with us? Oh, and by the way, did Jews control the world?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we're just going to settle this once and for all. We're going to end the myths. We're going to end the questions. In one moment of time here on The Line of Fire, we're just going to settle it all. I'm joined today by my longtime friend and colleague, Scott Volk, also a Jewish believer in Jesus. But I'm married to a Jewish woman. He's married to a Lebanese Arab woman, so a bit of a unique background there. But, Scott, let's settle this once and for all. We don't need to take a lot of radio time to do this. Do Jews control the entire world?
I don't think so, but I do know that one Jew will rule the world.
Oh, one Jew, right, right. Jesus Yeshua one day will rule the world. Hey, friends, it's great to be with you. We've got a really neat broadcast today. Let me give you the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Any Jewish-related question of any kind you have, Hebrew-related, Jewish tradition, modern state of Israel, having to do with Hebrew scriptures, Jewish-related question, Jewish background to the New Testament. If I can't answer it, Scott Volk is here. In fact, we'll let Scott go first on these. So phone lines open. But I do want to talk to you a little bit about this idea that Jews control the world. And then I want to talk with you about going to Israel with us. Scott's led more than two dozen trips over to Israel. This will only be the third one that I'll be directly involved with leading. So it's rare that we do this. We want to tell you about that. But, Scott, check this out. You may not be aware of this, but I saw this article in the Jerusalem Post. It's called A Jewish Super Bowl Trifecta, okay?
Can't wait.
By Alon Sinai. And here's how it reads. Sunday's Super Bowl 52 between the New England Patriots and Philadelphia Eagles will not only match two teams with Jewish ownership for the third time since 2012, but it will also be played in the new U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, a venue partially paid for by the Jewish owners of the local Vikings, the Wolf family. Patriots owner Robert Kraft will be eyeing his sixth championship since taking over the franchise in 1994, while Jeffrey Lurie is hoping to celebrate his and his franchise's first ever Super Bowl title after purchasing the team 24 years ago. And last year, it was the Falcons, and they're owned by Arthur Blank. So this is now the second straight year where Jewish-owned teams. So Jews have been very successful over the years. Do you think there's something like blessing on the Jewish people or just hard work ethic or education that's enabled Jews to, you know, to have a record like that with Super Bowl?
Yeah, it's quite remarkable when you think about it. I've often heard you teach on just the disproportionate amount of number of Nobel Prizes that have been won by Jewish people when, in fact, they're such a minority in society. There is obviously a blessing on the Jewish people, and I think they're called to be a light to the nations.
Somehow we haven't done so on the Olympics, though.
No, we haven't done so well on the Olympics.
So Jewish athletes, we're not really famous for
Jewish presidents, too.
Right, no Jewish presidents yet. So in order to control the world, we'd have to at least have a few more Jewish presidents. How many Jewish heads of state do we have in the world today?
That's a great question. I know of one. Do you know of any more than one?
I know of one.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure, for example, the leader of Saudi Arabia, leader of Iran, leader of, you know, Kenya, Mexico, they're not Jewish.
No, I don't think so.
Right, so one. But it's interesting because we have had a disproportionate influence in certain ways, mm-hmm. and there is evidence of a gifting. I mean, for good or bad, you think of Karl Marx and the influence he had with communism. You think of Sigmund Freud, the influence he had with psychology. You think of Albert Einstein, the influence he had in science. And yet, all Jews, none of them religious Jews, though, interestingly.
Amazing.
So Scott, when you lead tours to Israel, how many times do you do it a year now?
I'm in Israel between 4 and 6 times a year. Interestingly, though, bro, the last time I was in Israel, I saw a bunch of NFL players staying at the hotel where I was staying, only to subsequently find out that the owner of the New England Patriots brought a bunch of football players over to experience Israel. But I go between 4 and 6 times a year, and it never gets old.
All right, so hang on. You're not just going there to do humanitarian work as you do and to work with other believers in the land as you do, but you're also going there specifically to lead tours.
Yeah, I kind of backed into that. It was never my intention from the start, but it seems like the Lord has opened a supernatural door to where people are actually coming to us, asking us to bring their ministries, their churches, their groups to Israel with them. So I've been doing that 4 to 6 times a year now.
All right. But pretty much, though, the tour is similar, right? In other words, you're going to most of the same places. You have the same expert tour guide. So you've done this over and over.
Yeah. Most of the tours are similar as far as the places that we go to. But each tour holds an interesting dynamic because of the group that goes and the way the group comes together. It's really a phenomenal, phenomenal time. So although we see very similar sites, each group is entirely different, and I see the Lord moving in different ways in each group.
And then what is it, though? Like, just in the natural, you do the same thing over and over. You get bored by it.
Yeah.
But you are always excited about it, looking forward to it. I've never heard you say, I have to lead a tour. So is it just that as you see people impacted, the way they're impacted, that you see the oohs and the ahs and the amazement and then the buzz afterwards? So you're experiencing it each time?
I don't like to liken it to this, but it's the best example I have. I'm not a big fan of Disneyland, although I am a big fan of Israel. But every time I have brought my children to Disneyland, to see the looks on their faces and the wonder in their eyes brings me, as a father, just a natural sense of really satisfaction. When we go to Israel, far better than Disneyland, I have never yet been disappointed by the reaction of people when they go. Every single person who goes, their lives have been touched and their lives have been changed. I've had one negative report in all of the years and the hundreds of people that have gone, and the negative report was this group was pro-Israel.
Right, and even though you reach out to Arab believers and have a heart of reconciliation, they wanted you to just basically kind of bash Israel or show that Israel's
exactly,
bad. So you go to an Israel tour, right?
Yeah.
So here's what's fascinating, though. Let's say your favorite restaurant, right? You can go there over and over and over and over, and you enjoy it every time. And then if you bring your friends there, you get to enjoy them enjoying it.
Yeah.
You think of that, but then multiply it massively. There's something about being there, walking where Jesus walked. Yeah. Here's where Elijah called down fire from heaven. You know, to me, it was really hokey, the idea of getting baptized in the River Jordan. It's like, I'll never participate in that. And then we didn't even announce it on the first tour, but people asked for it. I thought, all right, we'll do it. Boy, was it powerful.
It was powerful.
We
bro.
Did it the second time, planned to do it the third time also.
Yeah.
Is it just like a sentimentalism, or is there more?
I really think that there's more. Obviously, there's a lot of sentimentality that comes when you go into a place like Israel. But what happens is when people go with hearts that are open, I think they're really not only encountering Israel, but they're encountering the God of Israel. You know, when the Lord says, I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, when he calls Israel my people, when he gives a land to a people so that his name can be glorified, you really recognize that when you're standing there. It far supersedes sentimentality. You are in the very place that God has chosen to abide in, where his name abides. And the only plot of land given to a group of people in the world is this land from God, is this land of Israel. It's amazing.
And the controversy surrounding it. And we know that history is going to finish there.
Yeah.
The climax of history. I've got to be totally candid with everybody about this. When I've been on the tours, I've loved being with everyone and loved being at different sites. I'm not the tour guide leader. I'm that's not my forte. And so we've got a great tour guide there.
Yeah.
And then you're there coordinating everything. So I'm with the people as much as I can be. But I want to minister when I'm there. I want to pour into the people in Israel when I'm there. I want to pour into the tour group when I'm there. I'm doing radio every night. Later at night, I'm writing. So we thought, all right, how can we do this and kind of make it best for everybody. Get the best of both worlds, not just going on a tour, but also going for ministry. So this year, this coming up February 1st through 10th, friends, to find out more, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on the Israel banner to find out more. If you're a monthly supporter, a torchbearer, you will get a special discount. You can write and ask for that one per household. And if you're not a torchbearer, basically it pays to become a torchbearer because your discount will be pretty much what you're giving for the first year. All right, so here's what we're going to do. It's going to be different than any tour we've done before, any tour you've done. There'll be key sites where I'll be there during the day, you know, whether it's Mount Carmel or whether it's River Jordan, there'll be key places where I'll be there.
Yeah.
But then every night, of course, having dinner with the folks, but then virtually every single night, we'll be doing some kind of ministry. Either I'll do a Q&A session with the tour group, or we'll go for a special time of ministry, a service where I'll be preaching. Or I'll just do a special meeting for the people there, bring in another guest to minister as well.
Yeah.
Or when we're done with that, folks can come with me, join me for the radio broadcast. Now, radio, that's always been a highlight where different folks will come each night. But I want to minister to folks while we're there. That's why we're calling it Holy Fire in the Holy Land.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that, too. And I think the thing that people are going to remember is twofold. Number one, being at the sites. Number two, really encountering the God of Israel. And that is really going to come as you're with us at these sites, in the evening meetings as well. How about having an Orthodox Jewish rabbi come and do a little Torah study and have you interacting with him as we did last time? When people come and they see that kind of interaction, they're blown away. Or have some Arab leaders in the land come interact with us, Messianic leaders in the land. I think, bro, it's going to be a remarkable experience. I would actually give people personally out of my funds, I'd give them a money back guarantee if they came and they said that this isn't everything they thought it was going to be, because I'm telling you, it far exceeds people's expectations when they come, when they experience the land.
And to be honest, because I've been asked to do tours for many years, said, no, I'm going to Israel to minister. I'm going there to serve the body. I'm going there to do Jewish outreach. I don't have time to do the tour. So when I finally did it, I knew it would impact people, but I was still shocked by how deeply it impacted people. And even though you were doing them over and over and telling me about it, I was still amazed. And now it's a few years since our first tour, and I'll run into people and they remind me they were there and it was memorable. It still impacted them to this day. So again, the dates,
February 1st through 10th, 2019. Go to AskDrBrown.org. There's a banner there. Click on the banner and sign up today.
All right, we'll be right back with your Jewish-related questions.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. That music tells you what day of the week it is. That's how I get oriented to what day it is. As the music on radio, okay, it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you, with my dear friend and colleague, Scott Volk, who has actually hosted this show for us, where I've been overseas a few times. He's done our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Gets a great lineup of guests. You've also called in a couple of times, haven't you?
I've called in a couple of times, yeah. I tried to spoof a couple of people, but I have called in a couple of times as well.
One time you called in as Rashi. And Rashi is the foremost Jewish biblical and Talmudic commentator, lived from 1040 to 1105. And you called in as Rashi, but the guy to ask me a Hebrew question, but the guy taking the calls years back thought it was Rashid. I remember thinking, why is Scott calling with a Muslim name for a Jewish commentator? And then we had Paul Wilbur in one time.
Yes.
Wonderful Messianic Jewish worship leader, one of our favorite worship leaders, psalmist in the world. And you called in, and remember how you set it up?
Yeah, I had some thick Jewish New York accent on. Told him next to Sammy Davis Jr., he was my favorite Jewish psalmist.
Was it after Billy Joel, Sammy Davis, Joel, whatever, right? And then asked him a question that you knew would be a hard one for him to answer, and I just let him kind of hang in the wind there for a little while before we jumped in. But you're right here,
yes,
in the flesh. So if someone calls claiming to be you, we know it's not them. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. A bunch of things I want to talk to you about today. But first, let's go to the phones, and we will start in Austin, Texas. Nicole, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
I had a question about if you can explain the significance of the transfiguration from Matthew 17:3, and why, I guess, God chose Moses to be there and Elijah to be there, and what do you think they were talking about, or what did the image represent to the other disciples?
Yeah, so obviously in terms of the significance of the event itself, it follows in Matthew, Mark, and Luke immediately on the words of Jesus saying that some here will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in the glory of his kingdom. So 6-7 days later, they actually see him transfigured. They get a foretaste of what is to come. And it does say that they were talking to him about what was going to happen to him. So we know what the subject matter was, but why Moses and why Elijah? There are two obvious things. When the Old Testament was spoken of as a whole, for example, Matthew 5:17, Yeshua says, I didn't come to abolish the law or the prophets. Or Matthew 7:12, this sums up the law and the prophets. To speak of the Old Testament as a whole, you'd speak of the law and the prophets. They kind of summed up the whole of it. So Moses obviously represents the law, and Elijah, the most prominent prophetic figure, obviously not the writer of a book, but the most prominent prophetic figure. So in a sense, it is now the fullness of the revelation, the law, the prophets, and the new covenant of the Messiah all together, and the law and the prophets preparing the way for the Messiah. That would be one obvious thing. The other thing that's interesting is that uniquely in the Bible, so you have Enoch who's taken up and doesn't see death. Moses physically dies, but God basically buries him so that the Israelites don't know where he's buried lest they make it into some kind of shrine. And then Elijah, of course, is taken up to heaven in a whirlwind and chariots of fire. So there's even something about their physical deaths that's obscured, or their bodies that's obscured. So, you know, that can play into it. But the most obvious answer is they represent the law and the prophets, and hence the whole Old Testament period, and that leads now to Jesus the Messiah inaugurating the Messianic kingdom, and that's what they were talking with him about.
And what did you say that you knew that they were talking about?
Oh, okay. So if we look, the account occurs Matthew the 17th chapter, right, and then it also occurs in Mark the 9th chapter and Luke the 9th chapter. So let's just take a look at each of the three accounts, all right? So Matthew chapter 17, Moses and Elijah appear before them talking with him. That's all it says, right? While they're still speaking, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, this one is my dear son. Okay, then if we go to Mark the 9th chapter, Mark chapter 9. So it's always good to look at, when you have parallel accounts, to look at all of them to see, okay? And it says, and Elijah appeared before them along with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. All right, same way there. And then in Luke, the 9th chapter, is the one other account, Luke chapter 9. And let's just scroll down here later in this chapter. And let's see, keep going. Verse 28, about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter, John, and James, or Jacob, went up to the mountain to pray. And by the way, Luke's the only one tells us, Luke's the only one that tells us that they went up to pray, all right, and that it was as he was praying that this happened. And then it says in verse 30, then two men, Moses and Elijah, began talking with him. Verse 31, they appeared in glorious splendor and spoke about his departure that he was about to carry out at Jerusalem. So there we have it explicitly. Again, you wouldn't know that from Matthew or Mark, but you get it from Luke. They were talking about his crucifixion. They were talking about his departure, what was going to happen. So again, that's why I say it's bringing together law, prophets, and now the inaugurating of the new covenant. You bet. Sure thing. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to David in Flower Mound, Texas. Welcome to the Line of Fire. Hello, David. David's gone. Let's go to Maple Grove, Minnesota. Deborah, you're on the Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you so much, Dr. Brown. My great-great-grandfather, whose name was Israel, had come to America in 1870 from Sweden, and we just don't have information about what the Jewish heritage in Sweden or life in Sweden had been. Do you happen to know anything historically around that time? I'm particularly curious to know if you know of any like persecution that might have pushed him to come here or anything.
Wait,
what's
the time frame again?
1870 was when he came here. At that point, he was about 30 years old.
Yeah, I'm not conscious of something in Sweden. As you get a little bit later in the 1800s, you have more and more pogroms, persecution of Jews in Russia,
okay,
and some related countries. But something happening in Sweden at that time, it could well be, but I'm not aware of it. I'm absolutely not an expert on Swedish Jewish history in any shape, size, or form. But let's just do this because we can, all right? Let's type in persecution of Jews in Sweden and anti-Semitism in Sweden, history of the Jews in Sweden. Yeah, you know, what's interesting is most of the articles I'm looking at have to do with persecution now because of the Islamic presence. It's interesting. Jews leave Swedish city after sharp rise in anti-Semitic hate crimes. That's 2010. Wow. Facing death chance and hate crimes, Sweden Jews live in a climate of anti-Semitism. Again, that's 2014. But here's what you can look at. The first article that comes up is on anti-Semitism in Sweden. And we'll give you some of the information. But again, something in the 1870s, I'm certainly not aware of it. And by the way, my grandparents on my father's side came from Russia, came to Ellis Island in America. That's when the name was shortened to Brown. My father, his brothers didn't know the details of what our name was, what it was shortened from. And unfortunately, we don't even know the exact city they came from and just was lost to us. So this is not uncommon. You know, the other thing is, though, if you go to a website like Ancestry.com or try to trace what you can back, sometimes you can find out more things if the name is not a common name like Brown. But again, if I'm not aware of any major wave of persecutions that was taking place specifically in Sweden at the time. You don't normally associate that with a lot of anti-Semitism in the 1800s, but again, it could just be something I'm not aware of. So hopefully you can check some of those resources and find out more. All right, God bless you. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, Scott, when people come on these Israel trips, obviously you have a heart for everyone in Israel, and you have relationship with Arab Christians as well. Your ministry, Together for Israel, is raising funds to help the poor in Israel, and there are many poor in Israel, and you've done an amazing work. I mean, God's blessed us supernaturally. Do you ever help out our believers, Palestinian? How does that work?
Yeah, there's no greater joy than to be be free to give to both Arab and Jew. You know, I say this, Mike. I say, if you look at Israel through a political lens, you're going to end up hating either Arabs or Jews or both. If you look at Israel through a biblical lens, you'll end up loving both Arabs and Jews because God is not necessarily pro-Israel. We obviously know in our human vernacular and in this century, that's what we say. But if God is pro-Israel, it might intimate to others that he's anti-Arab, when in fact, God has some amazing promises for Ishmael and his lineage. And I really believe that as we go to the land of Israel, we need to go with God to open up our hearts to what his promise is, not only to Israel, but to the surrounding Arab nations. And it's remarkable to me that there are Muslims being awakened in the middle of the night by Jesus himself, revealing himself to them. And they go from Israel-hating Muslims to Israel-loving believers in the Messiah, Jesus. So we're non-discriminatory in our giving. We ask the Lord to connect us relationally with people. We helped a woman.
Tell you what.
Yeah.
Hang on with that story.
Yeah.
When we come back, We'll talk about some of the help that's been given. Friends, join us in Israel February 1st through 10th, the trip of a lifetime. Holy Fire in the Holy Land. Go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Israel banner. Sign up today. It'll be here before you know it. We'll be right back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The wonderful sound of Hebrew singing from Israel. You can hear it for yourself February 1st through 10th. This will only be the third time that I'll be leading a tour to Israel. I've been to Israel many times to minister. But this time, we're going to combine touring in the day with ministry at night, plus radio later at night. The trip of a lifetime. I'm sitting here with my friend and colleague, Scott Volk, who's the impetus behind me doing these, because I refused for years. And when I've seen how amazingly people were impacted in these tours, we said, all right, let's do it. And even so, to get me to do it a second time was challenging. Now, a third time, it's going to be different than any tour we've done thus far. So all of the great features during the day, great tour guide Scott being with you during the day. I'll be there at key sites, and then special teaching at night, Q&A times at night, meals together. Just an amazing time. If you have a Jewish-related question, you heard from that music, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Any Jewish, Hebrew, Israel-related question of any kind, my joy to do my best to answer. Scott, as God has raised you up with a ministry together for Israel, I've never seen anyone as supernaturally blessed in this. I mean, God's just backing it. And people with money are coming to you, and they want to give you money. And the whole thing is you live to give. You are giving the money away. As long as I've known you, you've always been a giver. I mean, if we go out, I remember being in the Philippines. We were there with our whole missions team and, you know, a lot of people at a hotel, and it's the end of the night and we're all go to pay our bill and found out you'd paid it already. And I knew you didn't have much money then. It's like, how'd you do it? But as you've given with generosity, now God's pouring money into you so you can give more away. So you've helped not only Jewish believers in Israel, you've helped others who are not Jewish believers. Give me an example.
Yeah, we got a request from actually a Jewish believer in Israel who knew of an Arab Christian woman who was diagnosed with cancer and was now confined to a wheelchair, but her house was not wheelchair accessible. And it was going to cost them thousands and thousands of dollars to renovate the house to make it accessible for the wheelchair. So because this man is a dear friend of mine and he knew the situation that we were in, he contacted us and asked if we'd be willing to help. And, you know, that's not something that we've publicized or took pictures of, but it's one of the projects that brought me most satisfaction, knowing that here people from around the world are giving to bless Israel, and we're blessing the Jewish believers in Israel, we're blessing the poor and needy in Israel, and we're also blessing the Arab believers that are living in the land. And I really, really love that. And I believe, bro, obviously, you know, when Jew and Gentile come to Messiah, there's neither Jew nor Greek in Christ. When God looks down, he doesn't see Scott the Jew and Camille the Arab.
How about your wife, Beth the Arab?
Or how about Beth the Arab? That's right, Beth.
That works.
In the same way that Beth and I are now one, the two become one, so Arab and Jew really become one in the Messiah. That doesn't negate the fact that Israel still has some promises and purposes that God needs them to fulfill, and he needs to fulfill through them. But in the area of giving, there's no discrimination whatsoever, and it's a joy to me. And I've been asking the Lord, please, Father, bring me Arab people that we can sow into and that we can bless and we can partner with. And that's been my heart's cry, and the Lord's answering our prayer.
He is. And, you know, when it comes to this tour, this may sound odd to some folks, but I'm really jealous over the finances of our listeners, meaning folks who support our ministry. I want every dime to go into the gospel and to be used by the Lord. And we run a very frugal operation. And when we encourage folks to sow into our work, we want to make sure that the monies really go and make an impact. And so when I looked at the first time, okay, here's the cost of the tour, I'm thinking in my mind, all right, airfare is this amount, hotels are this amount, you know, it's X number of thousands of dollars people are paying to be on the tour. And I was thinking about, okay, I know it's a good price, but, you know, I'm jealous for every dollar there's for them, for their well-being. And Scott, as I'm there, I'm thinking, how in the world do we stand at such nice hotels? And, you know, the all-you-can-eat buffets in the morning and evening, and then the quality of the tour and the tour, you know, the whole bit. I thought, this is an amazing deal on top of it.
It's really quite phenomenal. And we've been blessed to be able to build relationships even with tour companies in the land. And because of the frequent visits that we make, we really get great, great prices that we can then pass along. And any extra funds that come in, bro, if there are extra left over, we're using to bless the people of Israel. We're using to bless Jewish ministry through Ask Dr. Brown. I mean, it's really, really remarkable. Our motivation for going has never been, let's make money. But if there's money to be made, the beautiful thing is that we're sowing that money back into Jewish-related ministry.
And everything you're doing for us, all the coordination, you're doing it just to serve our ministry, which blows me away even more. You encourage me to go,
yeah.
And then you do all the work to make it happen. And then in the end, there's nothing in your pocket. There's the joy of – so I'm indebted to you. Our listeners and viewers are indebted to you. So, friends, go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Israel banner, February 1st through 10th, next year, the trip of a lifetime. And all the tours that Scott's led, over two dozen now, the few that I've led, and then certainly my friends have led tours. We all have the same – every time the same story. People's lives are forever impacted to a person. All right, let's grab some Jewish calls. And I want to talk a little bit more about, there's a recent article by Alan Dershowitz, just from last month, do the Jews control the world? So these are these questions and myths are still coming up. And then I want to just give our listeners and viewers a little hint into what Judaism believes about Jewish tradition. First, let's take a call. We'll go to Antonio in St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I got a quick question for you. I actually just want to start off by saying I've actually been to Israel twice, and anyone who goes, they're going to love it. It's fantastic. So I have a few Israeli friends, and I try my best to study, you know, Jewish history and culture. Mm-hmm. So 2 weeks ago, one of my Israeli friends invited me to a Shabbat dinner, and they brought out a Siddur, mm-hmm. prayer book, and I wanted to get your opinion on, do you think this is authoritative, or, you know, because from my understanding, it's not one particular Siddur. There's like a division amongst Ashkenazi and Sephardic Judaism on what Siddur is, you know, appropriate.
Yeah, got it.
And
so first
the mezuzah.
Yeah, so first thing, the Siddur is the prayer book. So Jews pray out of a prayer book. It's not that they're not allowed to pray their own prayers spontaneously, but they pray out of a prayer book. And through the day, there are prayers that are scripted. For example, if there was some weather phenomenon, there's a prayer that you would pray. There's a prayer you pray after using the bathroom. There are lengthy prayers you pray after having a meal. So these things are scripted out. But, for example, Shabbat, Sabbath, okay, here are the Sabbath prayers that are prayed. Here's what's prayed in the synagogue. When you go to the synagogue early in the morning or you pray in your home, here are the prayers that are prayed. Here are the prayers that are prayed on certain special times of the year. So it's all scripted out. The differences between the two different Jewish groups, the primary groups, Ashkenazi and Sephardi, those are very minor differences within the prayer book. Overall, the major prayers are all prayed the same way. The variants are very minor. But within each community, that's authoritative. In other words, this is not so much taken as being inspired by God, although there are a lot of psalms that are prayed and there's some other readings from other passages of Scripture. But this is what the rabbis developed to give guidelines for Jewish people to pray, and then it became, this is how we do it, and you do it by the book. So it is what it is. It doesn't have divine authority for someone that's outside of Judaism. It doesn't have the authority of the Bible for someone within Judaism. But because tradition is important to traditional Jews. In other words, I learned it from his father, who learned it from his father, who learned it from his father, going all the way back to Moses at Mount Sinai. That's what's believed. So tradition is therefore very important to you. The Siddur is filled with beautiful prayers. many of the prayers, you know, for the rebuilding of the temple, for redemption, for forgiveness, for the regathering of the exiles, for the coming of God's kingdom, are beautiful prayers. What you'll see, though, is the assurance that followers of Jesus have in terms of sins forgiven in relationship with God is something that traditional Jews would be praying for, and it's something I would say we have experienced. But the Siddur is filled with beautiful prayers. It's great to read through and learn from, but the different traditions, the variations are minor within them. And within each community, that's what's binding, because you do it the way you learned it in your community. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Great. All right, appreciate your heart for Israel. God bless you. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, let me do this. If you're watching on YouTube or Facebook or just later on some other means, I want to put a graphic up for you. And it's from Pirkei Avot. Pirkei Avot is the chapters of the fathers called the Ethics of the Fathers. And this gives you what is believed to be the Jewish transmission of the Torah. All right, so not simply the written Torah, but traditional Jews believe that on Mount Sinai, when God gave the Torah, he gave it in writing and then orally with explanation, then expansion to Moses, who then passed it on. So these words are very famous, and I'll read them in Hebrew. Moshe kibel Torah mi Sinai. Umisarah v'hoshua v'hoshua liskenim, skenim v'im, v'im misaruha, anshech neser agadolah, heim amru shloshad varim. It goes on from there. So the beginning, Moses received the Torah from Mount Sinai and transmitted it to Yehoshua, Joshua. And Yehoshua, Joshua, to the elders, and the elders to the prophets, and the prophets transmitted it to the men of the great assembly, which would be about the time of Ezra. In other words, they believe there is an unbroken chain of tradition that's been passed down. And Scott, even though you weren't raised in a religious Jewish home and your mom and dad had a supernatural encounter with Yeshua, so they came to faith when you were still a young man, talk about the power of tradition in Jewish thought.
Yeah, well, it's incredible to me even to think about it now. I mean, some of my fondest memories are sitting around the Shabbat table in my Orthodox Jewish grandparents' home and seeing my grandfather breaking bread every week and praying. I mean, remarkable. Or how about Passover? I was the oldest son and grandson, and just memorizing the four questions that the Jewish boys would ask that would really give the elder at the table the opportunity to recount the Passover story. These traditions, you know, some people might say that they're dead. Actually, some of these traditions, the Bible itself, the Lord says, I want you to do this every year so that you can remember what it is that I have done. So the traditional Jewish family is, some of the things that they're doing are not necessarily biblical in the Bible or Bible prescribed, but so much of what they do is biblical. And it builds you up and gives you faith in the God who delivered Israel and who will deliver again.
And then if you go against the traditions, then you're told you're breaking with thousands of years of tradition going back to Moses. It's powerful. It can bring life. It can bind. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know what sometimes happens on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday? Beautiful music just played there. But sometimes we'll play music from my friend Paul Wilbur, one of the most anointed, gifted Messianic Jewish or any worship leaders on the planet. And what will happen is maybe one of these toe-tapping songs that I don't want to get into the show. I just want Paul to keep singing. And I mean, it'd be amazing to chat with Paul one of these days. 866-348-7884. This is Michael Brown. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Join in studio with my colleague Scott Volk. Now look, the fact that we can do a live stream, on YouTube and Facebook, video, and we can play video clips for you and all this, and you're watching, okay, thumbs up to everybody watching, and everyone's listening on radio, same quality broadcast, It's because of your generosity, your help, your giving. Now, when we have a guest in studio, we still do not have the setup with lighting and another camera where you can see that guest live, as with Scott now. So if you want to help us, go to our GoFundMe page. It's GoFundMe.com/ Ask Dr. Brown Studio. All right? GoFundMe.com/ Ask Dr. Brown Studio.
Imagine how many more people would be watching if they knew they could see me live on your show. I mean, come on.
Really? I mean,
at least my mom.
A whole lot more people. How many kids you have?
Five.
Right. So at least,
okay,
and Beth.
And Beth, seven
and
more.
And you got some sons or daughters-in-law?
That's exactly
so,
right.
So, I mean, it's a whole bunch. A whole bunch of people. All right. 866-34-TRUTH. I do want to take one more minute to address this idea: Jews control the world, Jews control the banks, and all that. But first, let's go to the phones. We'll start in Jacksonville, Florida. Paul, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Brown. I want to know how I can get on this trip with you into Israel, because I heard you've got amazing praise and worship as a part of your tours.
Yeah, so here's the deal.
That voice sounds strangely familiar.
It does. It sounds very much like another Paul I just mentioned, like Paul Wilbur. So here's the deal. If you'd like to come February 1st through 10th and do some worship meetings at night and be part of the festivities, then you get a free trip, buddy. So just want to mention that.
I think we should talk about that, because I think that's the first time I've heard free from you.
Oh, since I last signed my last like 30 books to you and autographed them?
Oh, my gosh!
Is that?
Or, oh, my gosh.
I just ignored the invoice that came later from
Oh, I'm so sorry. That was not meant to happen, but I know it was never paid.
This is really the Paul Wilbur on the phone.
This is Paul Wilbur.
This is amazing.
Yeah, I have lots of questions, but I'm so glad to be able to chat with you for a few minutes and hear your voice. Scott and I are doing trips to Israel. I'm doing one actually in September, Dr. Brown, with a new live recording.
Are you serious?
Called Roar from Zion, and Scott Bulk is in charge of that.
That's amazing. I mean, look, these are seriously some of the famous historic moments in Messianic Jewish music, when you've recorded live in Israel and different things. It's also a chronology of your life. Did you have a beard? Did you have a mustache? Did you?
Mike, I think we should let him promote his trip for a minute, and then Paul can give us a percentage of funds that come in for all of his trips.
I figure at least, whatever happens from here is at least probably 20% of your
trip. Go ahead, Paul. Tell us about your trip, bro.
September 22nd, Dr. Brown, September 22nd to October 1st, we're going to record a brand new live recording, and the subtitle is Rise of the Remnant. We're going to use all millennial Israeli, Arab, and Jewish believers on this project. It is going to all new music, although we may tip our hats to Days of Elijah. It'll be the 20th anniversary of when we introduced that song during the Feast of Tabernacles 20 years ago this coming September. But if people would like to join us, go to paulwilbur.com and sign up and join us. We've got a few more spots left. And I would love to talk with you, Dr. Brown, about joining you. I love being in the land. I'm going to be there a couple more times next month and back in May, and then we'll be there in, I think, August and September.
Yeah.
It's an awesome thing. And to be able to go with you to hear your unique perspective, you are a unique voice in all of the earth for understanding of all things, really kingdom as well as messianic, and the melding of the whole truth of the Word of God. You are a very unique voice, and I'm just delighted to call you my friend.
Oh, man, the honor and joy is mine, and the possibility of you joining us February of 2019 would be amazing. One thing, see, when I go to Israel, I want to minister. So the tour is amazing, but I want to minister. So this, we're calling it Holy Fire in the Holy Land, because every night, if I'm not doing a Q&A with the folks, we're going to have ministry, preach the word, get other believers in and have special meetings. So that's the whole goal, is that have the amazing tour in the day, encounter God through that, then encounter God through worship in the word at night. And by the way, quick testimony for you, bro. we've been together in meetings in Fort Myers, Florida, our friend Pastor Gaspar, powerful meetings where the presence of the Lord came powerfully, these Israel conferences. Well, he's been building relations with the Jewish community now for 10 years, not politically, but just relations, Christians and Jews coming together with their common love for one another. And he said, Mike, it's the 10th anniversary. We're having a big gathering. We'll have between 500, 900, they ended up with 700 people there. And he said, we're going to have Jewish Federation leaders, Orthodox rabbis, different ones, and I'd like you to bring the keynote message. I said, that's not going to work. I'm too controversial. It's never going to happen. He said, no, it's fine. We've built relationships. I was speaking on like anti-Semitism. He goes, yeah, something like that. Well, lo and behold, it happened this past Monday night.
So amazing.
And Orthodox rabbi and his wife from Israel sat next to me, got a standing ovation afterwards, and different Jewish Federation leaders coming up and thanking me. And it was Christians being Christians and Jews being Jews, but saying, listen, we share a lot in common. And it was extraordinary to see. So it's been fruit of building relationships. Hey, I'm going to grab some other calls, but it's awesome to hear your voice. And often on Thursdays, seriously, your music is played, and I have a hard time getting into the show because I just want to keep worshiping with my friend Paul Wilbur. I love you, man. Thanks for calling.
Love you, too. Have a
love
great
you, Paul.
Time. Talk to you soon.
All right. Well, that was amazing and unexpected. Real quick, about Jews controlling banks. Scott, the deal is that through some of our history, because of persecution, we could not even have normal jobs like others. The only jobs were money lending and things like that. And that's how Jews got into banking.
Incredible.
Because we weren't able to have other jobs. And then whatever gifting we had was applied there. All right, let's see if we got time for another call or two. We go to Richmond, Virginia. Denise, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, and hi, Scott. Dr. Brown, a quick comment and then a question. Just a little bit of trivia concerning Jamaican Jewish connection. There is a Jamaican folk song that has the word salo in it, and it's believed to be a derivative of the word shalom, and it's believed to be that the Jewish textile sellers in the early days in Jamaica, as they walked and came into the communities, the hillside communities of Jamaica, selling their textile and
Seriously?
And so on. Yes, they would say, they would call out shalom. And it has lived on in this Jamaican folk song as the word salo. I just thought I'd share that.
Wow, I never heard that. Well, thank you. Yeah. I just learned something.
Yes, so I am Jamaican, as you can probably tell.
Yes.
But I also have found out from an aunt of mine who did some genealogy research that my grandfather's mother was probably half Jewish. Mm-hmm. And so I am wondering, people like me who are kind of many removed from our Jewish heritage, is there any expectation as far as promises in Scripture or any obligation as far as the way we ought to live our lives, culturally, for folks like us? Just thought I'd ask.
Yeah, again, you're talking at something at obviously a great distance, and in that sense, it's not part of your own immediate heritage from a mother or father or something like that. Number one, as far as how to live, you live as a follower of Jesus. And what's laid out and taught in the New Testament for all believers is what you live by, and that's what God expects of us. If you feel he lays something on your heart to have greater identity with your Jewish people, not trying to become super Jewish or anything like that, but if you feel a greater sense of identity and say, hey, this is somewhere in our heritage, because there is a rich heritage of black Jews in history, or African Jews in history. So it could be part of your heritage, and God may just in a spiritual way say, hey, you've got some blood here, but this is also a deeper spiritual connection. But let it be a life-giving thing as opposed to, I'm commanded to keep the seventh-day Sabbath. No, don't look at it like that, because that wouldn't be true. As far as promises, some would argue that when God speaks of uniting Israel and Judah, that Israel, the 10 northern tribes scattered around the world, and then with much intermarriage and basically disappearing from history unless they were connected with Judah and the Jewish people as a whole, that there'll be a final reuniting, a regathering, that many who have been lost to history will be recovered. How that works out, how far it goes, at what point God says that the connection is lost to history, only he knows. But perhaps, and this is a big perhaps, is totally speculative, there is something to it with people that can trace back Jewish blood or Israelite blood, that there'll be some final regathering. But again, that is pure speculation. Is it one generation, two, five, ten? How far back do we go? So I don't want to open up a can of worms in that respect. But again, your identity, your primary identity is always found in being in Jesus, Yeshua. That's your primary identity. Everything else is secondary to that. And if you live by that principle, you'll be blessed. All right, go to our website, AskDrBrown.org. Check out the Israel Tour, February 1st through 10th, 2019, with Scott Volk, Trip of a Lifetime.